By the way, I'm Chris. I'm the pastor here at Table Life. So if it's your first time with us, first time in a long time, we're just especially glad that you've chosen to take this time. Or if you're joining us online too, just a great welcome to you. And we are in the fifth week of this sermon series called In the Fire. And that we've been unpacking the story of Daniel, at least in the first six chapters of the book of Daniel in the Old Testament scriptures. That's kind of the narrative portion, the stories of the book of Daniel. And kind of just to give you a summary of what's taken place so far, whether you've been with us or maybe you're just kind of jumping in the middle of the movie here. But that Daniel and his friends, about 605 BC, so it's about 600 years before Jesus, they became literal exiles in the region, the city of Babylon. And what had happened was they were taken from their home in Jerusalem when Nebuchadnezzar and his army ransacked the city and really conquered the whole region, set things afire, took people from their homes. It was just a miserable time. And Nebuchadnezzar took the kind of smartest and brightest kids, Daniel and his friends were children at the time, and deported them 900 miles away, so the equivalent of going from here to Nevada on a long, long walk across the region to Babylon to be re-educated and trained to be servants in that kingdom. And so they were kind of put in this training camp where they learned the Chaldean culture. They learned the way of the Babylonians, what to do and what not to do. But when all this happened, they were also learning something else that was really important. They were learning how to stay faithful to God in a land that didn't know God. How to stay faithful to God in a land that doesn't know God. See, when they were in Jerusalem, everybody worshiped God. I mean, that's what you did. You prayed, you went to temple, you were with your family, you read script. Like, you did all those things. It was like natural and normal. But now, being in a totally different land and place that was not doing that, Daniel and his friends had a decision to make. What were they going to do? Were they going to kind of give up their faith? Were they going to just kind of go along with everybody else? Or were they going to continue and carry on? Were they going to remain faithful in this different land? So over the last 5 weeks, we've been asking this question for us, kind of applying that to us. How do we remain faithful in the fire? How do we remain faithful in the fire? And I don't know what your fire is. Your fire may look different than the person sitting next to you. I mean, it may be that fact that maybe you're the only one in your workplace that is a follower of Jesus, and everybody else does everything else that they want. Or maybe for you, it's a literal fire, a challenge, a situation in life right now that is eating you alive, and that causes you to question a lot about God and your faith, and where is he in this, and what am I doing? As you're trying to carry on in a challenging circumstance or a struggle or a painful situation. But all of those things, we've been looking at the story of Daniel and how he's been responding to the challenges that he's been facing. And so the first week, we looked in Daniel chapter 1, kind of a summary here, that we learned that faithfulness in exile, and whether that's a situation or where you are in life, it requires that we decide, that Daniel had to decide about what he was going to do, how he was going to react ahead of time. He had to decide. And then in Daniel chapter 2, we learned that faithfulness in exile means that we invest in what's eternal. We kind of have a long game perspective about what really matters. And that puts the things in front of us really that may not be as important or may not fit in that kind of realm of things, that we take an eternal perspective. We take God's perspective on what's going on, and that we might be rattled by something that's going on right now or even the challenges of the kingdoms of this world, but that we were taught in that story that none of that remains forever. None of that stands forever. And we can't be so caught up or so focused in worshiping those things that we lose sight of what God wants us to do and where God is going. And then in Daniel chapter 3, we learn to remember that faithfulness in exile, that we have to remember we're not alone. And that was the story of Daniel being thrown into the fiery furnace and the challenge that he was there, and how when Nebuchadnezzar looked into the furnace, he expected first there to be no visual signs of anybody existing. You know, you kind of burn alive, right? But he saw four figures, Daniel and his two friends, but then a fourth figure in the fire as the Son of God, there embracing and standing with him. We remember that we're not alone. And sometimes The fire doesn't go away. The fire doesn't just disappear. But the most powerful thing to know is that we are not alone when we face it, that God is with us. He walks us through those things. And then last week in Daniel chapter 4, we learned how faithfulness in exile means that we walk in humility. Because pride comes before a fall. And we saw that in the story of Nebuchadnezzar and how he was, you know, kind of brought to his knees in a way by the challenges. He thought he was all that. But then God showed him that, hey, the things that he was investing in, how he was puffing himself up all the time, was not the most important thing. And so this week in chapter 5, the main idea is that faithfulness in exile means we live differently. That's what we're going to look at today. Is faithfulness in exile means that we live differently from those around us, from how we used to live before we became a follower of Christ. Or we're differently than the way that we would live or the way we would react or respond to people or whatever it may be, that we're different than people that don't know Jesus. So, and the thing is, if we're not living differently, if God has not just done the work of saving us, but also beginning to transform us, then there's something wrong. There's a really great book that I read not too long ago by Craig Rochelle. It's called Christian Atheist. Highly recommend it. You're looking for another good book to read in the fall time if you're a reader. I think it's on audiobook as well. And it's a really intriguing story. But he starts off the book by telling the story of how he was on a plane trip, and how he encountered two atheists he met on the plane. The one was the usual kind. The one that said, I don't believe in God, religion is the worst thing that has cursed humanity, I don't believe there's existence, I believe that only like science can explain everything in the world, you know. And Craig said he listened to the guy and he was legitimately had good arguments and things, and that was where this man was. But then he met this woman, a woman who he called a Christian atheist, meaning he started talking to her and having a discussion. And some of the things that she was talking about were not behaviors or actions or things that you would ascribe to someone who is a Christian. And then they kind of got talking about work and what happened. Well, Pastor Craig Rochelle had to do the big reveal, that yes, he was a minister, he was a pastor. And then as so commonly happens, the lady was like, oh yeah, well, I'm a Christian, and I'm a part of this church, and she started to go off these things. But he said the thing was that stuck with him was that the two things didn't line up. Like this woman, her proclamation about being a follower of Christ, but then the things that she was talking about doing and sharing and being a part of, that he called that situation someone who's a Christian atheist. And in his book, he kind of outlines and challenges us to recognize that there's a lot of Christian atheists walking this earth. There's a lot of people who proclaim Christ, but act nothing like a follower. And so that's what we're going to talk today about, what it looks like to live differently. That when we're following Christ, that we can't help but be transformed. We can't help but avail ourselves to the transformative power of the Holy Spirit. And the first thing that we recognize in Daniel's story, we're going to unpack this, is that living differently means, first, we recognize what is holy, but we don't expect others to. That we recognize what's holy, but we don't expect others to. Now, just kind of an illustration of this. So last year, this time, we had the Olympics going on, right? And you may recall there was a big news story in the opening ceremony. There was a skit that took place as part of that. I think we have a picture to kind of jog your memory there. And it was this celebration that some said it was of like the Greek gods, and other people said it was like a mockery of the Last Supper. And there were artistic designers who were interviewed that said no, they were kind of doing this thing because of the Greek influence of the, I don't know. I don't have a dog in the fight, let me just say that. But what was interesting to me is that the religious people, we're all up in arms about how Da Vinci's Last Supper, which is what they believe this to be a mockery of, that it shouldn't be mocked. That Christians get that. Like, the Bible is holy, church is holy. It felt, like, very offensive. People said, like, I'm just so offended by them doing this. And, like, in a similar way, like, you know, we would expect that Muslims, like if the Quran was mocked, or that like the Jewish people, like, you know, that if their religion was mocked or their high holy days were mocked, it's, you know, there'd be a similar offense there. But we also have to recognize that on the flip side, it's also normal that we get used to people in general not observing or caring about what we do. And that having an offense to that, we shouldn't expect people to be reverent about the things that we hold holy, as much as they are important to us. Part of living in exile means that most people are not seeing eye to eye or not worshiping the same way that we are. See, when we live in Jerusalem, just like Daniel, that Christendom, the culture supports what Christians think. But in exile, we can't expect people to know or do or even care about some of those things. So, and for many people, it's for no fault of their own that we can't put Christian expectations on people who are not followers of Christ. So here's a personal example for you. So years back, I was a pastor and church planter at a church in Virginia. And as we were kind of getting this little fledgling church up and running, we had a partnership with our local elementary school. So I got to volunteer there and work with some of the teachers and got to know a lot of people. Well, as is in most elementary schools, I think they still do this around here, but there was a special day that came up called Career Day. Everybody remember Career Day? Like maybe, I don't know, your kids go through it sometime soon. Like, you know, what is Career Day? You get like a sampling of like adults that come and like share their careers. Lots of parents, lots of people from the community that way. So one of the teachers invited me to come to Career Day. And at first I was like, really? Are you sure? You want me to come to Career Day? So here's a picture of me getting ready for my career. They printed up a little thing there. So I was like, well, what should I do? Like, you know, I kind of like dress like this. Like, I don't fit the role of a pastor. People, I can like go incognito lots of places. And people don't think I'm a pastor. So how do I look more pastorly? So I'm like, I got a stole, right? So I'm like, put the stole on. And I'm like thinking like, what's going to be cool for kids to like see what a pastor does? So I had my little chalice and cup. I brought like a whole bunch of stack of Bibles from like different translations and some languages and stuff. And I'm thinking like what else? Like I brought a little pitcher and like baptistry. We're going to show them like baptism and things. And I remember like walking in, they had it all set up in an auditorium. It was like less of a walk into a classroom and more like a career sampling. And I remember walking in this auditorium, and of course, there's like the cool firefighter in the corner, right? With like the hat, and guess what he had? The dog. Yeah, how do you beat that, right? Anybody, I was like, I should have brought, like I didn't have any pets at the time, so I was like, I should have brought like somebody's rabbit or something. I don't know. That wouldn't really, I don't know how that would connect to church. But they had like the dog and stuff and like all these cool things. Then on the other side, can compete with the firefighter, there was a dog trainer making like flips and like jumps and things. Like how can you beat that, right? Just an amazing thing. And then on the other side, somebody's mom was like this amazing baker. Like she had like donuts. I mean, kids and donuts and stuff. Like how, I'm like, this is not gonna go well. So I sit at my little pastor table with my like chalice and like book, my Bibles and stuff. And I'm like, yay. And I'm like standing there and like kids are like passing by. I'm like, hi, I'm the pastor. Hi. And they're like, oh, I'm going to the donuts, right? They're doing that. And then one little boy stopped and he said, I know what you are. And I'm like, great. Like, this is awesome. And I'm like, what do you think, little boy? So what are you? He didn't see the sign yet. He's like, you're a karate instructor. And I'm like, he's like, show me like the kick or something. He's like trying to, and I'm like, honey, I don't do any of that. Like, no, I'm a pastor. He's like, but pastor, what does a pastor do? And I kid you not, like time and time again, I had kids walk up and they're like looking at the like chalice or looking at me like, what's that thing around your neck? And once again, are you like Kung Fu Panda? I don't know. So I'm like, no, sorry, I'm not the karate instructor. But it was kind of the first indication in me that first Christendom is dead. Seriously. Like, I mean, most of the kids there did not know. And this is about 8 years ago. Most of these kids had no idea what a pastor was. Like, what about the priest? Do you have a rabbi? I don't know. I'm like that, you know, there was nothing. And the thing is, the things that I thought were holy were not even recognized. Like, I mean, I had the Bible, I had like once again chalices that we've used for communion, I had this baptism set up. They weren't recognized. And I think we have to acknowledge that. That sometimes we recognize things that are holy, but we can't necessarily expect other people to, or have those expectations or impressions. And Daniel and his friends, they knew that that day they got to Babylon in 605 BC, first off, they never got to go home. They lived the rest of their lives in Babylon. But they knew that, that they couldn't expect the people around them to believe or worship the same way that they did. But then there's this event that takes place another 60 plus years after they are in Babylon, after they're taken to Babylon. You imagine, at this time, Daniel and his friends, they're older, 60 years later, right? And what happens is there's actually a new king. It's actually the third king after Nebuchadnezzar is on the throne. And this event takes place. So let's look at this event in Daniel chapter 5, starting in verse 1. So Belshazzar is his name. He's the king at the time. He held a great feast for 1,000 of his nobles, and he was drinking wine in the presence of the 1,000. When Belshazzar tasted the wine, he gave orders to bring the gold and silver vessels with which Nebuchadnezzar's father had taken out of the temple, which was in Jerusalem, the holy, holy stuff, so that the king and his nobles, his wives, his concubines might drink from them. And then they brought the gold vessels that had been taken right out of the temple, the house of God, which was in Jerusalem. And the king and his nobles, his wives, his concubines drank from them. They drank the wine and praised the gods of gold and silver, of bronze, iron, wood, and stone. So what happens, so King Belshazzar, by the way, he ruled during his dad's reign as his father was on these military expeditions. And so at this time in his rule, he was a young man, and he was kind of a partier. He was a reveler. And so the story says he invites 1,000 of his royals to the palace for what is a big drinking party. A big drinking crazy party. And not only that, but once the party gets rolling, he has this idea that he's going to make it extra fun by going to his grandfather's treasury and taking these gold artifacts, these holy, holy artifacts from the Jerusalem temple, and use them as part of the party. Like crazy, right? I mean, these were vessels, these were things, these were cups and chalices and things that were used in the sacrificial system of worship. For the Jews at the time, these were things that were held as sacred to them. And Nebuchadnezzar had first stolen them from the temple and taken them with him to Babylon because they were like really beautiful and expensive. And now, 60 years later, Nebuchadnezzar's grandson uses those holy things as part of his big drinking party. That's what he does, you know. And I don't know about you, but I don't know if you've noticed this, but like drinking makes you do really stupid stuff. It does. Like, I mean, I just read recently a 4-year study said this. It determined the following, that young adults who binge drink frequently are more likely to show disadvantaged decision-making patterns than their peers who don't drink. And part of me had to ask, you needed a 4-year study to help you figure that out. Like, it's true. It's just crazy. Like, it makes them do really, really crazy things. It's not a good idea. But then something disrupts the craziness. So suddenly, the fingers of a man's hand emerged. Ooh. And began writing opposite the lampstand on the plaster of the king's wall, the king's palace. And the king saw the back of the hand that did the writing. And then the king's face grew pale, and his thoughts alarmed him, and his hip joints went slack, and his knees began knocking together. So it's crazy. There's a hand that pops out into that whole party situation and begins writing on the wall, and Belshazzar fills his pants. He's like terrified, right? I mean, the thing that came to mind whenever I read this story, I don't know about you, this is the image that comes to mind. Here you go. Yes. Da-na-na-na. Right, I can't help it. I'm like, the hand just like comes and like writing on the wall here. But if ever there was a come to Jesus moment, this was it for Belshazzar. I mean, he's just doing his thing. He's partying, he's taking it like, we're gonna use the holy things and we're gonna like get drunk and do all that. Like, you know, but this is his come to Jesus moment, really. I don't know if have you ever had a come to Jesus moment? Like maybe you were confronted with something, a truth, about yourself. Maybe your coming to Jesus moment was the moment you hit rock bottom in something you were doing or addictive behavior or habit. This is this come to Jesus moment. But something else that we have to recognize here, that when we're living differently, right, that's what we're talking about. First, we recognize what's holy. We don't expect others to. Daniel wouldn't have expected Belshazzar to think anything as much as those holy objects were holy to Daniel. They were not holy to Belshazzar. But the second thing we have to recognize is that living differently also means we allow our plans and desires to be disrupted by God. We allow our plans and desires to be disrupted by God. That part of living differently means that we're attentive to God's hand. We look for God's hand. We're attentive to what God is doing. And let me say this, that God's hand in our lives often comes as a disruption. It often comes as a disruption, and that's the time to pay attention. I mean, it may be in the crazy big drinking party that all of a sudden something like hits you. You're like, oh gosh, I need to stop this. Like, you know, but that's the thing. Christian atheists, we go back to that idea, are the ones that know of God, but don't allow their lives to be disrupted by God. They believe God, but don't allow any disruption in anything or any aspect of their lives. And that's the thing. Has following Jesus ever cost you something? Have you ever had to sacrifice something? Has it ever had to take a diversion from the plan for your life or what you want to do and submit it to God's plan? To be attentive to that. And that's the thing. Are we allow our plans and desires to be disrupted by God? We submit those things. And so we see in the story the king, he's scared. He's scared. He's trembling. His knees are knocking. And so he has no idea what this means, though. He has no idea. So what he does is he calls his astrologers for advice. You know, he goes, am I Libra or Scorpio? What do the signs say? He asks all the people what to do, the people who were advisors. And of course, they learn from Nebuchadnezzar that you don't try to interpret dreams, visions, any of that kind of thing. You just, I don't know, right? And they tell him that, we don't know. And then someone says, hey, Belshazzar, you got to talk to your grandma. Go talk to grandma. So grandma comes, and if grandma ain't happy, no, ain't nobody happy, right? Grandma ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. And grandma, she's not happy with the situation. And so she comes to her grandson and says, why haven't you called on Daniel? Go call Daniel, because Daniel was the one that helped Nebuchadnezzar, and he's still here, so go and call on him. Belshazzar, he didn't know him, right? He's a lot younger, but his grandmom does, and grandmom's telling the truth here. So Daniel goes to Belshazzar. He's summoned to Belshazzar, and he's given the opportunity to interpret what this handwriting on the wall is. That is not, they're not sure what it says or what it is meant to be read. And Daniel first, though, he's smart. He gives a recap to Belshazzar, because he's not sure if he knows this or wants to remember, but he gives a recap of what had taken place with his grandfather, of what had taken place with Nebuchadnezzar. All the things about how he was pompous and arrogant and how he was prideful and how eventually he was humbled by God. And Daniel does a kind of reminder. And isn't it true? Like, don't we repeat, have generational patterns that repeat in our lives? I mean, we see that right here. And Daniel's trying to make a stand to say, it doesn't have to be that way, Belshazzar, right? You can go a different direction. You don't have to lean into the story of your family and the things that have taken place over the decades. And so Daniel gives that recap of what happened to his grandfather. But then he continues in verse 22. He says, yet you, his son Belshazzar, have not humbled your heart. You know, Nebuchadnezzar didn't humble his heart. Look what happened. You've not humbled your heart. Even though you knew all this, but you've exalted yourself against the Lord of heaven, and they've brought the vessels of his house before you, and you and your nobles, your wives, your concubines, even drinking wine from them. And you've been praising the gods of silver and gold, bronze, iron, wood, stone, the very things of the statue from Daniel chapter 2, the things which you do not see, hear, or understand, but the God in whose hand are your life breath and all your ways you have not glorified. And then the hand was sent from him, and this inscription was written out. So the third thing we have to recognize, that if we're being different, we're living differently as a follower of God, that we value what is God's because God is holy and we are too. We value what's God's because God is holy, and that God has given us his image. We are image bearers of God. And Daniel, he says to Belshazzar, he says, like, listen, Belshazzar, you should have known all this. You saw what happened to your grandpa. You saw him lose it all. The things that he invested in his life in, they fell apart. They were destroyed. That story, that vision that he had of that statue and all these kingdoms, it's coming true, Belshazzar. And then he tells him, like, now you had these vessels and you've desecrated them. The point is that God is holy. And these are his holy things. But friends, you know, it's broader than items. You know, like items are maybe a symbol and they point to God. They point to things. And we would be upset, right, if somebody came and like desecrated our communion table here or tore down things in the sanctuary. Like that would make us upset. But you know what else is God's? There's lots of things that are God's, right? That it's broader than the items. To be holy. The word holy, by the way, you know, we usually think, oh, somebody's like high and holy. It means to be set apart. You and I are called to be holy. We're called to be set apart. And that includes things in the people of God. Because the things, you know, what else is God's? Things like your body. How do you use your body? You know, are you using it are you set apart? Are you using your body to glorify God? What about your neighbor? Guess what? Your neighbor is also created in God's image. And I don't know what your neighbor looked like. If this is a like physical neighbor, or you're looking around people who look different than you, are from different places than you, you know, that they are created in God's image as well. All of creation, you know, that this world is a gift. The things that we have are gifts. That all that is God's, it all has sacred worth. And that's how we see differently, friends. We see people differently. We see our world differently. It's because God is holy and we are too. But sometimes in our arrogance of life or in our pursuit of our self-promotion, we lose track that there's a God in heaven who's redeeming all things, but is also calling us to be more, who has more for us than just being about us and having our way or being right at the expense of relationship. That we see ourselves as valuable because we are created and loved. And that's what Daniel's trying to point to Belshazzar. Like, don't you see it, Belshazzar? You had this opportunity. Your grandfather went through it. Like, don't you want to grasp that? And that's part of us living differently, is we value what's God's because God's holy. And that we see ourselves and our neighbors and our world as also holy because for the fact alone that it's created by God. But there's also a fourth thing. There's a fourth thing that living differently means is also we're attentive to the fact that we know that God will judge us all. God will judge us all. You know, and this is something that sometimes we shy away from, we don't like to think about or talk about. But the truth is we all are accountable to God. That we're gonna have to give a testimony for how we act and what we've done and what we do. And so Daniel goes ahead with Belshazzar. He interprets the writing on the wall for him to help him out. And it's just a few words, by the way, that are written there. But Daniel continues in verse 25. He says, now this is the inscription that was written out. Many, many, tekel apuasin. This is the interpretation of the message. Many, God has numbered your kingdom and put an end to it. Tekel, you have been weighed on the scales and found deficient. And Perez, your kingdom has been divided and given over to the Medes and Persians. And then Belshazzar, probably scared to death at this point, gave orders. They clothed Daniel with purple, put a necklace of gold around his neck, and issued a proclamation concerning him. The now in authority is the third ruler of the kingdom. All well and good, but then that same night, Belshazzar, the Chaldean king, was slain. So Darius the Mede received the kingdom at about the age of 62. Like, isn't that like an interesting like middle section there, right? He's like, Daniel, we're going to give you all these things. Like, okay, like almost like trying to make it not happen. Like, don't we do that? Don't we like beg God, like, hey, I did all these things or whatever. And then like, you know, I like dug my own grave and like, please don't make anything happen. God, I'm going to like come to church every Sunday. I'm going to like give, like, you know, and like the same thing though. it happens here. And that's Daniel's prediction all the way back to chapter 2. It's coming true. Darius the Mede receives the kingdom, and the Persians come in, and they conquer the Babylonians. Like, all this is taking place. But I think it's a big reminder to us that there's a God in heaven who will judge every kingdom, and is going to judge every person. And whether we recognize him or not, whether we're an emperor or a peasant, we're all held accountable. We're all held accountable. And this message is not just for the king or for Daniel, but I think it's also here for us. And it was a reminder to the Jews. It was a reminder to the early Christians of that fact that nobody really gets away with everything. Sometimes in this life, we have to allow God's justice to take priority and entrust that, yes, one day God will have justice in that situation. But what happens in this life, though, more often is that it's easy to believe that it's all about us and our happiness and all the things that we can do. And it's the norm in our world to be told that you and I, we deserve to be like a God. We deserve to be worshipped like a God. We deserve to have everything we want as a God. But we're reminded of our need for God, but also the fact that God expects something of me. God expects something of me in the gift of faith, the gift of salvation, the gift of his grace. He expects something of me, and my life is lived in a response to that in what I do, and that my prayer and hope is that one day when I give that account, I can say truthfully, hey, I did with what you gave me, God. I can be held accountable for this because I used it to the best of my ability, that we live in response. You know, it's kind of like the story that was told to me of a man who was asking his friend, they were talking about their spouses, and he asked his friend, do you think your wife is hard to please? And the friend said, I really don't know. I've never tried. Right? But that's the thing. It's just like with God, like, we're not just, don't make this connection. We're not, like, trying to please God. We don't earn our way to be with God. Where God gives us and showers us with his love and grace. But there's a part of it that he gives us these things, and we just don't try. We just don't even try. We just go off and continue to live. It's all about me. It's all about what I can get. It's all about my life and what I can do. But God is doing something in the world, and he wants to use you. It may not be to do all the things that are all needed around the world. Gosh, that's so overwhelming, right? But it may be in your office. It may be in your neighborhood. It may be in our region. It may be to that one person, that one child, that one conversation, that one thing. God wants to do something through us. And it's not an obligation of, like, I have to do this, right? It's not like, okay, God's going to judge me, so I better, like, do some good things and, like, rack up my bread. Like, that's not what it's about at all. It's more the attitude, I get to do this. I get to do this. Like, hey, I have been blessed. And maybe, you know, I'm not the richest person. Maybe my situation in life, like, I'm in a fire right now. Like, all those things. But hey, because of God's grace and love and his generosity in my life, I get to bring about just a little bit of glimmer of light in a dark world. I get to love and serve. See, for Balthazar, it was too late. It was too late, but the good news is for us, it's not. It's not. God has so much more for you and I in this life. So many good things to be a part of it, but the thing is, it's to pay attention to the movement of God's hand, to follow that, and to be aware, because faithfulness in exile means that you live differently. If you're a follower of Christ, and once again, if you're not a follower of Christ, you're figuring, like, great, I'm so glad that you're, like, listening to this and you understand, like, that's why Christians are so weird, right? All those kinds of things. But if you're a follower of Christ, being faithful, even if it's in exile and the fire, nobody else around you, nobody in your family believes, I don't know what your situation is, but it still means that we live differently. And like Daniel, we've been through fires, but we know a God who walks with us. See, what Balthazar saw as cool, he used for himself, but Daniel saw it as holy. And sometimes it requires us to allow the disruption of God's hand to redirect us, to change us, even to take away some of the things that we thought were so important in life. And we recognize ourselves as God's people in the world, wherever we are, part of God's kingdom. and that we know that we are held accountable for our actions. And so we don't want to be, I don't know about you, I don't want to be another Christian atheist in this world. Do you want to be another Christian atheist? Like, there's enough of them. Let's just say that. See, just as the Apostle Paul says in Titus, he says, those people, Christian atheists, they profess to know God, but by their deeds they deny him, being detestable and disobedient and worthless for any good deed. So I want to challenge you today to ask yourself that question. How am I different? Like, and maybe it's a situation that's like staring you in the face right now. How am I going to be different? How am I going to take the high road when everybody else is taking the low one, right? How am I going to be different from the people around me or someone that doesn't profess Christ? How am I going to be different from the old me, the one that was like 10 years ago, what people would have expected, how that person would have expected to act? Like, will I allow God's disruption to bring attention to the things that might need to be turned around in my life? Will I join God in the redemptive work that he wants to do in humanity and in our world? The question for you today is, do you see God's hand in your life, in the world? And do you see the writing on the wall and the call to be different? So let's pray together.